Forrest, my name's Ron, and I'd like to say a few words, and I'm trying to get some music turned off.
Yeah.
Especially for jumpers. Yes.
I thought if I said a few words, that would be an instant reason for the whole party to degenerate. And from there on, it's like it's a birthday party, after all. Our birthdays are a joyous occasion, always, because it's when you stop having them that you're in really big trouble. And you know tonight's a joint birthday party, the Ayn Rand and John Hyde, two of my great heroes. I've got a birthday party. But this thing of stopping having birthday parties, that's Ayn Rand's problem. That's entirely her problem tonight. Now, talking about Ayn Rand and ladies and graves and things like that reminds me of a epitaph on a lady's grave up around Kalgoorlie that I saw, and it had written on the grave, "Never been found." And I was naturally curious to see this written on the grave, so I made some inquiries. "Never been found?" I said, "What's this all about?" They said, "Oh," they said, "it's all to do with the family. It was a very poor family, very big family, and this lady, you know, managed and cared for a family as they did in those days, and the meal times were like always leftovers, having these leftovers, and in the end, they thought, after she died, well, for 30 years we've been having these leftovers, but the original meal has never been found." And that's not the epitaph. So Ayn Rand, this wonderful Russian-born philosopher and writer, has been the subject of many books. One of them is called "It Usually Begins with Ayn Rand." And that highlights how effective she's been at bringing quite complex economic and philosophical theories down to the ground level where people like I can understand. And she's had this wonderful interface with the business people, and I think she's the most effective spokesman for the free market ideas with the business world. And she pungently reminded business people that they can only defend themselves if they firstly identify with what's actually being done to them. And they don't have to put up with it. You know, it's the sanction of the victim. The victim will only receive that continual punishment if they just put up with it. She put it in a couple of ways. One of the quotes that I love is, "The greatest inspiration leadership this country could ever find rests in the hands of the typically American group, the businessman. But they can provide this only if they acquire philosophical self-defense and self-esteem." Here's another three very short, sharp quotes from Ayn Rand's work. "Men have been taught that it is a virtue to agree with others, but the creator is the man who disagrees. Men have been taught that it's a virtue to swim with the current, but the creator is the man who goes against the current. Men have been taught that it is a virtue to stand together, but the creator is the man who stands alone." Another one. "Man is not the property nor the servant of the tribe. A man works in order to support his own life." And to finish with, "Power lust is a weed that grows only on the vacant lot of an empty mind." I think that's Ayn Rand is an absolute manifesto. It's impossible to do justice to Ayn Rand so briefly, but it's now my pleasure to move on to the alive and well member of our duo tonight.
May I get worried, do I?
Unfortunately, no epitaph for John Hyde. But talking of epitaphs, Justice George Sutherland once said, "For the saddest epitaph that can be carved in memory of a vanished freedom is that it was lost because its possessors failed to stretch forth a hand while there was still time. That's an appropriate theme to connect with John Hyde. As you know, he's devoted many years of his life to doing just that, stretching forth a saving hand while there was still time. If you want to discover the real character of a man, just ignore what he says about himself and look instead at his dealings with other people. Similarly, it's true of governments. Ignore what their extensive and expensive propaganda say about themselves, but just judge them instead on how they deal with their own people. Do they steal from some to give to others? Do they indulge in such acts that would be illegal for individuals? In the late 70s and early 80s, John, with a small band, approximately 10 in number, became alarmed at the way government policies almost always resulted in impoverishing further the Australian public. They set about to devise ways of reversing that trend. They called themselves the Drives. They orchestrated a whole range of policies to revitalise Australia, but were astonished how their own party, the Liberal Party, treated these ideas. The ideas were treated in the same way as the human body treats strange proteins, yet they absolutely rejected them. This agenda was ready-made and awaiting the ALP when they were stripped of power in 1983. The ALP claimed these policies as a momentary alternative to their full-frontal socialism. The details were well documented in John's book, Dry, In Defence of Economic Freedom. Demands a place on everyone's library, and everyone that's got kids or that aren't, every one of their kids with that book. Lou Rockwell has written another book that John has just been presented with tonight, a similar book from the US point of view, called Speaking of Liberty. And in describing his book, he also accurately describes John's book. These are his words. What possible difference can another book make? Why should anyone care about the message of one book compared with the many millions of competitors? It comes down to this. Though there is an astonishing proliferation of words in our time, there is a drastic shortage of something that is essential to the survival of civilization. Defences of property against the ubiquitous enemies and its main enemy, the state. Core principles contain within them the power to slice through billions of other words based on trivia and fallacy. Though we are outnumbered and outgunned on every front, we believe in the power of ideas to make a difference. This is why we libertarians write. John Hyde's made a difference by bringing ideas to the threshold of people's consciousness. With his book, with his 745 newspaper articles, but more importantly with his consistency of putting policy and principles before politics. Because of this, I'd like to propose him as the first inductee to Australia's Economic Freedom Hall of Fame. For an inductee to be selected. Well, let's settle that tonight before it gets out of the room. That we tell it to ourselves. So let's.
At this table, I've already been called a wet.
Well, that's a good start. You have to lift your game. Well, so this is what I suggest. Just two criteria. A person who acknowledges that the free market economy has a record like no other of offering morally based economic advancement to everyone in all walks of life. And secondly, having recognised the above fact that they then proceed to do something about it, and in doing so have made a significant difference. We all talk about it, we all mumble and grumble, but some people do it and make a difference. So I propose John as the initial inductee. I'll simply sit down and throw the meeting over to anyone that's to speak, and they can speak for this resolution or against the resolution. But I tell you, at the end of the night, if it's not unanimous, they've got big problems. Because I've been chairman of lots of companies, and we never go home until it's unanimous. So I've moved the resolution. It hasn't been seconded, but I'll leave it to the rest of the meeting to carry on with this democracy nonsense.
Can I add to it?
Please.
Well, firstly, I'd like to second the motion. I think it's a great motion. I think John's a very worthy recipient. And there's no doubt we need a lot more like him. And I think it surprised us all when we started a think tank here. How long ago now, John?
September 83.
20 years ago. I didn't think we'd even make a ripple, but it made a great difference. And I think it continues to make a great difference. And I wholeheartedly support Ron Manning. I think it's a great initiative. And I would like to think that this Hall of Fame will be a very high-level body. And to get into it, you've got to be really outstanding. And I can't think of anyone better to be the foundation member than John Hart. So I certainly support the motion.
I think that you should look in the mirror, Hal. I think that you should look in the mirror.
Probably Safe seat to a marginal seat and then lose it. But he did all of this because he was absolutely honest to himself and to what he believed in and to what he thought and what most of us believed were the principles of the Liberal Party, the libertarian principles, which very few people subscribe to, but John did. And I found it quite interesting that in the most difficult of times politically, in what is in the House of Reps, which is really a bit of a coliseum, and it's all political, it's all nasty, it's all short-term issues, it's all who's going to win, John stayed remarkably above all of that. And it was just, he had enormous respect across the chamber. And he had that respect because he just believed in ideals, and he fought for ideals, and he didn't go in for any of the cheap stuff. And it's a strange thing. I was just thinking about it before I stood up. People like Bert Kelly and John Hyde, people who are driven by ideas, actually, they seem to be different people. They seem to be different from the rest of us in many respects. They're people that I'd like to be like in many respects. They don't have any enemies. They're not judgmental of people. They don't see the bad side in others. They don't criticise those who are opposed to their thoughts. They simply argue the case. They argue the merits of the case without getting personal, without getting political, without looking at what the scoreboard's going to be, the political scoreboard's going to be the next day. They just seem to be Bert Kelly, John Hyde, and the very few people like them in politics just seem to be remarkable people. And so while I'm supporting the motion for John's induction to the Hall of Fame of Economic Freedom, and I'm also talking to, I want to just say, as a person, I think he's just an exceptional character. He's just got, I mean, people say that, well, I think Lyndon Rose said the other day that the dries and the economic libertarians aren't fighting economic issues, they're fighting moral issues. And it's very nice when moral issues are fought by moral people. And I think, from my knowledge of John, and being with him as a colleague and as a friend for many years, I just think he's one of the nicest and most decent people I've ever met. So I'll leave my comments at that. But to say also that there are that the economic drives seems to be a very misunderstood movement. John, through all the work that he did and all the writings that he did, showed that it was an honourable cause that can be fought by very honourable people. So I support the motion.
I wish I'd been responsible for interjection on McLean. One tell you that I've heard this story before, but most of you won't. We had just lost in Victoria, and that we were going to lose federally was a fairly open secret. And we were discussing what we might have done to save Victoria. And we'd gone round and round, and we must have spent, or to do it nationally, we must have spent half the national GDP. Going round and round the party room, we sucked up to every vested interest after another. McLean must have been getting mildly fed up and sat there away from him in the party room. He says, "Hey Malcolm, why don't we try good government? It might be popular."
He didn't like it.
He did not like it.
That wasn't politically correct.
It was also too late for anything to save us.
I think a pause is probably appropriate to allow everyone to get into the topic. Continue this after the meal.
And we're
teaching. Queensland. It's addressed to Ron, but easily to John as well. I'm delighted to be invited to John Pye's induction tonight into the Australian Economic Hall of Fame. However, I regret that I shall be unable to attend due to the fact that I cannot arrive in time. Nevertheless, please pass on my regards to John and Helen. I thoroughly and cheerfully endorse his induction with a great deal of delight. It's a pity that Australia has not produced more men of his calibre. I've taken time to understand what economics is all about, and then tried to do something about reversing the socialist trend in this country. John's contributions will have a lasting effect. He may not be able to perceive changes in the socialist storm which has engulfed this country, but every individually applied effort adds fuel to the fire, grist to the mill, and hope for the overtaxed multitudes. My fondest regards to John and Helen, and all who do attend tonight. I shall be with you all in spirit, Ronald Kitching. And also from Gina Reinhart, dear Ron and Jenny, I'm unfortunately unable to attend the above function. We'll be out of town. Thank you very much for the invitation. Please pass on our best wishes to John on his birthday, and hope that you all have a wonderful night, which I'm sure you will. Warmest regards, Gina Reinhart. Also, I bring a personal apology from George Cales as well. He's probably with you tonight. And I just add my own remarks for John and Helen that I'm very full of admiration for the way you've stuck to your guns. And also I came in sort of my involvement and support at the end of sort of the time of the AIPP and when it was merging with the IPA. I left an excellent legacy there to go on with, and also still involved with the IPA and still writing the articles of the book. So congratulations, John and Helen, also keeping up the good work. I know it's been thoroughly supported by people like Ron and other people around the table and by the Puffs. But full of admiration and well done for sticking to your guns. Cheers.
I'm getting embarrassed. This is why I want to stop the loop for some thank you. Well, first of all, I had some difficulty deciding what the hell I was going to address you all as. Clearly I'm a wet. I've been told that twice so far. It was only once the first time. We're classical liberals, we're libertarians, and we spread over a bit of a range there. I thought of calling you fellow enemies of the state, and with all the things that would get us sent to the gulag under Section 8 of the Russian Criminal Code, but Sometimes we even like the state to do a few things, like maintain the rule of law. So perhaps enemies of the overweening state. Now, I've got just one message. Think back 30 years. Just cast your mind back 30 years. Whitlam was on the throne. And Snedden was mucking about as only Snedden could. We just had a green paper on agriculture. And that was about all of that. But in 1975, we got the Asprey Report. Talks an awful lot of sense on taxation. Nothing much was done about it. There's quite a lot of sense to it. And the Industry Assistance Commission was formed. And Fraser was elected. Now cast your mind back 20 years. Perhaps the less said about the intervening period, the better. We did get to Canberra. Thatcher was lording it over all and sundry in the UK. Obviously the debate had changed, didn't it? Hawke was on the throne of Australia. We'd already had a mini budget. It was an extraordinary. I was in a car at the time. It was being broadcast straight from Parliament House. So I pulled up beside the road. And he was this confounded socialist, and I reckon he was going to make a balls of things, doing so many of the things that we'd advocated, that we'd fought with Fraser over, tried to get him to do. The Labour Party. The currency was floated. 1984. Features well in literature. We all know why, but all was wrong. During that year, we had the Martin Report. We had the Newry Report. And, as important as anything, having taken these tough decisions and virtually waved two fingers at some of the most objectionable vested interests in the country, he was re-elected. It changed perception of what a politician might do. Now cast your mind back 10 years. Mr. Tom Keating was the Prime Minister. He defeated Fightback, which was a singular tragedy. He'd done it with a most disingenuous campaign. But he got away with that, was also a tragedy. But, although he couldn't stop, although he didn't advance the economic reform very much. He did in one respect, it's competition policy. Very, very important. That's something at all, big things. He couldn't or wouldn't or didn't, I don't know, put it back. From that day to this, the Australian economy has been going gangbusters. It really has been amongst the top economies in the world all that time. Now, that was no accident. It went back to reforms that took place over those years, which I haven't bothered to mention because you know them as well as I do. Now, there probably there's been a lot of bull talked about me tonight. We'll stick that a bit to one side. There was always a team in this game. Probably, though, it was never a big team. Probably in all of Australia, no more than about 500 of us. They were in the parliaments, in the think tanks, in universities in places, and some pretty dreadful places, the people at universities. There's also some very good ones. Defence Force Academy, Reserve Bank and Treasury, and some of the state treasuries, some in business, even some in the professions. And this small group didn't do anything except argue. They just kept on arguing. And they won. That's what I want to do. They won. Just by arguing. In the realm of the open society, they were able to put their views without being jailed for their claims. Really. photographs to the ghost of the chap who had the shoulders I stood on most of all. And that was Bert Kelly. Now Bert was a rough taskmaster. And drinking with Bert's ghost, I think, would be a dangerous occupation. I'm not certain whether I would fall down crying because he was chastising me for my backsliding, or fall down in fits of laughter because he managed to see something funny in every situation. But Bert Kelly fought more or less alone. None of us did that. We fought as a team, and we had a little win. Bert Kelly.
Bert.
Jenny just asked a question, what is a wet? And I said, a friend changing.
Careful.
Hang on, Margaret Thatcher defined one once. Helen, how do we define a wet? Helen was reading all this big text. Tell him about spending more than he's prepared to raise in taxes and then leaks it all to the Guardian, is what she described a wet. Well, in Australia, substitute the Age for the Guardian. basically, Jenny, a person who will not face reality, I think is the best definition of a wet. And that way, there are a few wets on the so-called
right term. Tony Blair.
Yes, although he'd be better. Probably true, but there'd be probably even more of them in Conservatives, right?
Not
anymore. Not anymore. I hope you're right.
I think most of the Maybe's cabinet.
Particularly the first one. What about the second one? I mean, that'd dried out quite a bit, hadn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't want to be the only bloke here who actually knew quite a lot of these characters.
Well, not personally. I was in Australia, not from certainly her initial cabinet.
John, please speak up.
Who she subsequently came to see as quintessential wets. And some survived to the end. Indeed, her nemesis, Geoffrey Howe, who she regarded as relatively dry, was her undoing.
He was, but I think more than Thatcher regarded Howe as dry as at one stage.
There's a program on Maggie that's sometime this week.
I think it's on Wednesday.
Yeah, I heard it's all done.
Your
ABC, by the way.
I was shuddering to think the other name of that program.
Oh. How's it feeling about the great model of the BBC?
Yeah. It must be smarting a little bit, just going out of its way to defend the indefensible.
Extraordinary situation.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing about Blair is he started out to be Lennon and found himself as Karinsky. He's created a tiger, and now the tiger's chasing him.
Oh, I think that's true. But, I mean, he wouldn't be the first Prime Minister who's done that. Those that have been there some time tend to find their right in this tiger.
But he seems incapable of joined-up thinking. I mean, I'm quite sure that he's genuine.
when he says he, you know, he's got having a war against the drug culture, and then he knights Mick Jagger, who's an icon of the drug culture.
Ron, despite the fact that John's tried to close the meeting with on the voting, but I'd certainly like to include my vote on John for the special Hall of Fame that you've started tonight. But I'd like to thank yourself and Jenny for thinking of me and organising tonight. It's a great privilege for me to be here among so many original thinkers, and I've just been a follower, in particularly John, but I can remember 20 more years ago being in England and being so impressed about, you know, a few groups like the Adam Smith people and one or two others in England, and I realised, you know, when talking with them, that they had actually influenced Margaret Thatcher. Was, you know, her policies were created almost by the influence of these people, and it was, you know, a bolt of lightning for me. And when I came back, I thought, I came back armed with pamphlets and so on, I thought, I've got to do something like that here. And I soon discovered that John and Harold really had things going, and I really have to say, I'm sorry Harold isn't here at the moment, but he's been he's such a wonderful enthusiast, and not only he and his wife, but all of the Clough family.
I got a call from Billy Clough from Brazil today, passing.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had a lot to do with Bill, and you know, you can't have greater enthusiasts than the Clough family, and I know John's appreciated the support.
AIPP were never wrong without Helen either.
Absolutely.
She's the one that kept it solvent.
Well, I've always been a bit afraid of Helen. You know, she's always been there and making things happen.
I thought it was about a preach the
virgin. Both. When I then got here, I discovered indeed that John had a network, and that it was really active and doing the things that I'd see in England. And to my amazement, really, because I didn't really believe that we could inject ideas into society and have anything happen. But John did that, and this team, you're right, John, you and Helen really.
Oh, and soon. Now, if we didn't have these clubs helping us get these numbers, you know, these forever numbers, it was very tedious.
It's true. Absolutely true. But it's also been a wonderful and humbling experience for me to be among people who are genuine thinkers, who bring up ideas from scratch. And so the experience has been wonderful for me, and I'm ever grateful for you.
Every
John,
time I bring up brought up an idea tonight, you've accused me of being aware.
Well, this idea of yours that farmers should control everything in Australia, I mean, and the farmers from Del Wallonia should be the leaders, I mean, that's a little bit, you know, astray. But anyway, thank you, John. Alan, and particularly the club family, and Ron and Jenny. Thank you very much.
Would Chairman would a rendition of Happy Birthday to the birthday boy? Yeah,
I think we can do that.
We should do that.
Oh, it must be embarrassing.
Yeah, we do.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Could I say that it's a unanimous approval? There's no dissenting vote. John, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the
to what we've created tonight, the Australian Economic Freedom Hall of Fame. There will only be one inaugural member at this stage.
Thank you very much.
You've set such a high standard, I don't know who will get it as number two. So I'll be a positive.
Try how tough.